The following discussion is not necessarily the views of all involved. The goal is to start open and honest discussion in the Christian worldview. Like all things, weigh what you hear with what you know, and join us in our pursuit for the truth. Enjoy the podcast.
When Joel brought up triple helix individuals.
Don't even talk about this, man.
It would make a great fantasy novel. And the outer asteroid belt is the body of a dead god. And it's like, oh man, this is Warhammer. That's what this is.
It's the aliens in Assassin's Creed have triple helix.
Aliens in Assassin's Creed.
You know we're getting close to the end because we're derailing pretty hardcore.
Welcome to the Second Rate Saints podcast. My name is Josh, and to my left is...
I'm Joel, and to my left...
My name is Colton, and to my left...
Back to me. If you noticed, this is the second episode in a row without Caleb being the host. But
true.
Joel's back.
One of the hosts.
Yes.
The host.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
And we are without Cole and Stewart.
True.
Again, which is... super sad.
Half size.
It's one guy though.
You're ruining the joke.
Is Cole two persons, one being?
We're not doing this.
We're not doing any of this.
We're not doing any of this.
Is he a binary?
Okay, we're not binary. Okay. If you want to see past and future episodes of Second Rate Saints, I'm doing our media plug now. Go to secondratesaints.com, where you'll also find a link to our Buy Me a Coffee if you would like to support the podcast. You can also follow us on Instagram and X, and also Threads, I think. We're all over the place, wherever things can be found. This is today's episode.
Yeah.
Woo!
Shoot us an email on why we shouldn't talk about Billy Carson.
Oh, we're talking about Billy Carson today. Absolutely. And if you have any comments, questions, or concerns about that, check us out. Send us an email at secondratesaints@gmail.com. You can also get our questions to us from the chat feature on the website.
Yep.
It's all there.
Yeah. But before we do dive into this debate, Joel, you've read something, haven't you?
I learned to read. I was reading Dark Night of the Soul by St. John of the Cross, which we've actually already talked about on the podcast. I audiobooked it though. And so I actually am going back and reading through it again. But this time, rather than just like a get this information in my head kind of way, it's more of a devotional way, right? So I'm doing it a couple chapters at a time and just trying to make it make sense, because Christian mystics are really hard to get your mind around.
You might have to define what that means.
So a Christian mystic is usually somebody whose life is defined by suffering, illumination, and theosis. This is kind of the three categories that the Catholic Church has set out around what it means to be a Catholic mystic, a Christian mystic. And I think that we've let go of a lot of saints too easily, and we think of saints as being merely a Catholic thing. And I think that we need to reclaim some of that heritage.
It's fascinating.
Yeah,
St. John of the Cross.
Yeah,
why was he considered a mystic?
Him specifically. Again, for a lot of the reasons, the suffering, the enlightenment, and the theosis. He actually became the spiritual advisor to Teresa of Avila, Spanish mystic, and kind of. You know, which kind of shows you how mature he was, because he did that when he was 24, and she was 50, I believe, in her 50s.
Oh.
And she came under his guidance, and they started something called the Discolated Carmelites, which was kind of, you know, the Carmelite order, kind of based off of the practices of Elijah, Mount Carmel, of course. They kind of had this hermit background to them. They would spend a lot of their times in devotion and prayer, completely apart from society. And they said, you know, this isn't quite hardcore enough. We would like to be the discolated one. So all that means is they just didn't wear shoes to show even more devotion to the kind of standing on holy ground idea.
Right. Like Moses.
Yeah. And so one of the things that makes St. John of the Cross so interesting is that he actually was imprisoned by the mainstream Carmelites while making the Discolated Order. And they trapped him in a bathroom for like months and months. And while he was in there, all he had was a writing pad. And so a lot of what Dark Night of the Soul is him writing poetry and reflections during this time when he is like literally rotting in a closet. I believe he got out just before he died, right? Like he got out and then a couple months after he died, something like that. I'm only just becoming familiar with the story now, but it's fascinating. And then the Dark Night of the Soul, is a more complicated issue that now I think it's like the fourth time we've brought it up on the podcast. Cause Krista Winter mm-hmm. brought it up when we interviewed him.
Yep.
Yep.
And kind of one of the big things that I've gotten out of it so far. And this is like the image from Dark Night of the Soul is that looking straight at the sun eventually feels like darkness because you're so enveloped in its power that it really makes no difference whether you can see or not. You know, this thing that previously has given you illumination to all things, you're looking directly at it and it's blinding you. Mm-hmm. And so this darkness of the soul is never actually darkness. It's always just been the overwhelming purgation of God's holiness towards you, right? So this idea of like the sun's burning away the sin in your life and mm-hmm. it's illuminating it, but it's also lighting it on fire. And so it's painful, but it's also, you know, mm-hmm. alleviating. Right. So it's awesome. I'm loving it so far, but he also has some very interesting stuff about the seven deadly sins, and he kind of inverts those into the spiritual seven deadly sins. So there's such thing as spiritual greed, you know, people who collect devotional items and relics and things, but really don't collect devotion in its primary sense. Like, right. The comparison
for
he makes
sake,
is...
For sake, but not for the love of God.
Yeah.
Okay.
He was talking about like a guy that had bought miles of rosaries, right? Like, and he bought all these different beautiful relics, made out of all of these precious stones. But he never found him to be spiritually fulfilled as much as another friend that he had that would pray on a rosary made of fish bones.
Right.
Right. So this guy,
wild.
Yeah, it's like this weird, like.
That's good. That sounds like very Jesus-like.
If mystics are one thing, it's sound very Jesus-like. Right.
Sometimes. Yeah.
Right. I mean, the Catholics have kind of categorized Paul as a mystic as well, because visions are such a part of a kind of mystic heritage.
Okay.
Yeah.
We do need to have an actual episode just on Christian mysticism.
Give me some more time because I'm reading through Avella. I just finished Brother Lawrence.
Yeah. Well, here's the thing. I don't know what to make of, especially medieval
mystics. Catherine of Siena.
Yeah, is another good not going to talk about Catherine of Siena. There's a lot of, we would consider many to be heretics. However, does that make them actually heretics? I don't know. If they are inspired by God, they're saying something very profound. If they're not, sometimes they seem a little crazy. And that's an entire conversation we need to have.
Dude.
I'm not going to say that most of them are heretics. I like mysticism mm-hmm. as a concept. Some, I guess my knowledge of mystics comes more from the more esoteric side of them.
Yeah, same.
So to be fair, I'm always very skeptical when it comes to that.
Yeah.
However, St. John of the Cross, mm-hmm. what's the name of the book? Sorry.
Dark Night of the Soul.
Dark Night of the Soul. It's a pretty influential and big book.
Yeah, it's definitely one of the ones that appeals more to very interesting mystic readers.
Sure.
Which is cool. And I'm not like a mystic. I'm a Pentecostal, so whatever that
so
is.
So a mystic.
So a mystic. But
1 degree removed.
A mystic that doesn't know there were other mystics.
There you go.
We're the only ones.
I see no one up here but me.
You're surrounded by people that are the same. I'm the last of my kind.
Yeah. Well, and yeah. Sorry, we won't get into my relationship to mysticism because it's still developing and we'll talk about it later.
Okay.
Next episode.
Next episode. I'm just...
Guys, I'm selling my house. I'm moving to the desert.
So I was levitating the other day and all of a sudden I was thinking... Now, that is another thing. Levitation is like, that's their
Would you say John the Baptist was a mystic?
Some people would. I wouldn't say that.
I also wouldn't say that. But
I mean, voice crying in the wilderness.
Yeah, there you go. And,
I mean, Elijah stuff.
The desert
going
themes,
there.
The suffering themes. He becomes God. I mean, no, never mind.
The desert dads.
The theosis desert stuff to me dads. Is confusing. By the way, theosis means to become God, sort of. It's more complicated than that.
Yeah, become God, sort of, is a great way to say theosis.
I mean, how else am I supposed to describe it?
That's fair. That's why we can't describe
every
it.
Every Protestant ever try to describe.
Look into it. It's very interesting. Yep. But
it's not Mormonism.
We're not here to talk about... No, it's not Mormonism. We are not here to talk about Mormons and... theosis, but
for
to
the
talk,
record, Mormonism yep. believes in apotheosis.
Yes, they do,
which is not theosis.
Yeah, they won't ever say that, but
yeah,
they do. Anyway, we're here to talk about something that happened very recently, actually. And by recently, I mean we've already missed a lot of the bandwagon, which is actually, I think, a good thing. We're not here to capitalize on the West Huff Billy Carson debate in terms of like, oh, we want the views, the clicks, anything like that. We want to have an actual conversation about how the debate went down, the attitudes of the people going into it, the outcomes coming out of it, and how the conversation was handled and kind of its fallout. It's been a bit of a crazy last month since this happened. Mm-hmm. It's been a bit more than that, I think, but there was a lot of wild stuff said both in the episode and after the episode. And by episode, I mean the debate, but it was actually fully released by West Huff, which is where we're able to get this. So I would recommend before listening to us cover it, you should go watch it yourself. Before we can taint you with our poisoning the well of what we think about what happens during it, I'm just kidding. But before we say what we think about it, it's really worth looking over it yourself. Mm-hmm. That's the full unedited, unaltered West Huff versus Billy Carson debate.
Yeah.
And it's fascinating.
So for those of you who haven't delved into this topic before, this was basically the presidential debate for us at the Second Rate Saints, where everyone just all of a sudden was like, it happened. Right? And this was kind of a big deal for biblical YouTube or however that works. But if you haven't heard of Billy Carson is kind of this kind of Christ conscious. If you ever heard someone say like Christ consciousness, that's one of his big things. If you have ever heard of like ancient alien stuff, that's his big thing. Alternate history is huge, and he considers himself to be an expert on biblical texts. He considers himself to be an expert on biblical texts
versus an expert on biblical texts.
Dude, Wes Huff is he president of Apologetics Canada? Is
that he's the CEO or something like that?
Nope,
he has a big position there. Right?
But yeah, I think he either founded or he was one of the main founders of it. I could be completely wrong with that, but I will admit I didn't know about any of these three people until this actually dropped.
I actually didn't know about Wes Huff.
No, me neither.
Yeah.
I don't think a lot of people did. He's kind of hung out in the background talking about what he likes to talk about, and he's sort of grown in popularity over time, but that's mostly because of what he says that's actually true and his deep analysis of things. And he's an actual scholar of biblical texts.
He's the director of Apologetics Canada.
That's the word.
In central Canada.
Yes. Yeah, in Ontario.
Yeah. Not all of Apologetics Canada.
Cool.
And so he's in like if you've been to a conference, like a youth conference, or like a big one that 5 to 10,000 people. Maybe if you've been in a youth group, you'll have a speaker from Apologetics Canada, or if you went to seminary or an undergrad where you studied apologetics, Apologetics Canada would have been a resource that you would have gotten a lot of your stuff from.
Yeah.
He's one of the higher ups.
Yeah.
Not only that, he's 33 and he's a expert in ancient Near Eastern literature and languages.
And scribal culture is like a big thing.
Specifically scribal culture, which is awesome because it's like it's how these documents were written in the various cultures that they were written in to be able to analyze if, let's say, someone brings up the Emerald Tablets of Thoth like Billy Carson, he would be able to assess and to show you because he studied all of the literature and the processes of how this literature is written to tell you, no, that's a forgery.
Yes.
And to tell you how it's a forgery. And to tell you when it was a forgery.
Yeah.
And it's difficult because a lot of the times something that is mentioned that he brings up a lot is people will go to the black market and buy 1,000, 2,000 year old papyrus scraps.
Yeah.
And then write on them.
Yeah.
In that language, in that style.
And so the issue is then you carbon date the papyri and it's just, this is not what it should be.
No. And that's why you have to know something more than just, oh, this is an old piece of paper.
Yeah.
You have to know, well, there are certain things, and we've said this a lot on the podcast. Mm-hmm. When you read the Bible, you have to understand that it's written for you, not to you.
Yeah. Yep.
And it's not written in the literary styles that you're familiar with. And so there are markers that are seemingly invisible to someone who is not trained to read stuff that you just take for granted. And we learn these things in English class in school about how to read a novel and how it's different than a poem.
Yep.
And how free verse is different than sonnets.
Yep.
Even though they look similar.
Yep. And one can mistake history for fiction, but if you're trained to know what to look for, you're going to know the difference between Middle Earth and Earth.
Well, and specifically in like the biblical case, when history is written in a narrative format.
Sure.
So, and how to tell the difference between history, historical narrative, and historical fiction.
Right.
Those things start to...
And all of its various subgenres from there.
Yeah.
It gets crazy.
Yeah.
Especially when we're talking about ancient texts that we that have been either passed down through generations or some of them are like potentially 4,000 years old.
Yeah.
Or older.
And so when we hear, like you were saying, when this was like our presidential debates, when we hear Wes Huff talk to Billy Carson and then Joe Rogan and then on the Patrick Bet David podcast, we're hearing all these things that we've been learning in school and like higher than what we've learned, but still we have some knowledge of this stuff and it's awesome because it's like finally.
Yeah. Well, it's, I don't want to say it's validation, but it's definitely, it feels like a conversation we've been expecting for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Right. Like if you've listened to anything that Joe Rogan's ever done interviewing in like history, you know, especially this alternate history kind of pet theory stuff. A lot of it tries to use biblical text as proofing, right? And kind of this, you know, the Bible's got this hidden history that they're trying to hide from you, and then they can get conspiratorial about it with how the Bible's put together. And I think that, you know, people like us who have maybe spent a little bit more time on the we haven't done like the textual work, but on the actual studying of scripture.
Yeah, and that's something that
seems obvious to us that they're misusing it. Yeah.
Yeah, and that's something that does need to be stated. We are not experts in textual criticism.
Oh,
we do not actually read the text and manuscripts or anything like that, and we never claim to. But when we're criticizing someone like Billy Carson or even Wes Huff or something like that, it's not on the grounds of we're experts trying to debate to bunk them like Wes Huff tries to do, but rather we are common observers looking at it, studying the best we can, and making up conclusions based off of our own knowledge. Mm-hmm. And honestly, that's all we can do because we are not Wes Huff who lives this life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which
and I find fascinating. Have some specialty.
Sure.
Of study, but not nearly as comprehensive or as focused.
No. Well, I believe he's working on his PhD. I think that's his position right now. That's
good. Yeah, because he has.
He really should.
On his website, he has a bachelor's in sociology and then a master's bachelor's of sociology from York University and then master's of theological studies from Tyndale University and is currently doing his PhD in the New Testament at the University of Toronto's Wycliffe College.
Whereas Billy Carson is kind of a bit of an internet personality more so than a scholar or anything like that. I don't know where he's like. Again, I hadn't actually heard about any of these people until the debate happened. Billy Carson apparently is pretty big in terms of this. I would describe him as a pseudo-Gnostic. He believes in this hidden knowledge and forgotten truth kind of thing that's rediscovered from all different kinds of sources, usually to do with aliens and to do with the material world rather than the spiritual world, as they will come up in the debate. but I didn't know who he was. So listening to for the first time, I didn't know what to expect from either of these people. But I've gone back and listened to some of Billy Carson's stuff. And man, I will admit, there's so many things coming at you at once, so many different ideas. And he backs it up with words from people that he's actually met or different sources that he has read. And he keeps throwing all of these different opinions out there, things that you cannot prove to be false unless you know like a lot about it. And it comes off as being very true. So to me, it's no wonder that a lot of people buy into what he says. He says things fairly convincingly in terms of like the wording. I do believe, however, that most of it is rhetoric. It's the way he says things and the kind of intrigue that the things he says promotes that I think has made him so popular. Yeah. He's not a scholar. He doesn't know what these things are.
So from his website, Mr. Carson recently has earned a certificate of science with an emphasis in neuroscience at MIT, has a certificate in ancient civilizations from Harvard University among his most notable achievements. Billy Carson is the CEO of First Class Space Agency based on Fort Lauderdale, Florida. Mm-hmm. Specifically, his space agency involved in research and development of alternate propulsion systems and zero-point energy devices.
Yep.
Mr. Carson is also the founder of Forbidden Knowledge TV and Forbidden Knowledge, which the number four and yep. then Bidden Knowledge, a conscious streaming TV network. He's also involved, and it's not here, but there's a YouTube collective called Gaia. That is involved in a lot of ancient civilizations, alien stuff, and alternate energy propulsion systems.
Right, right.
Atlantis, like those things. A lot of the stuff that we covered on the our episode on biblically accurate aliens.
Yep.
And what's unfortunate is he takes real legitimate new archaeological viewpoints that are growing and co-opts them. And you see this with this is a pattern that he has with a lot of stuff where he takes an established viewpoint and tells you his interpretation of it as if it is the thing.
I 100% agree. And he has a foregone conclusion about what the universe is and how it fits into like the spirits, mm-hmm. the spiritual idea. And he takes that and then applies things into it mm-hmm. rather than, what we say, if we're talking about the Bible, exegeting it, he will take it and apply it to what he already believes.
Yeah. And he is a best-selling author, which that's debatable, of The Compendium of the Emerald Tablets.
Yep.
Woke Doesn't Mean Broke, and The Epic of Humanity.
Cool.
I don't actually know much about The Epic That Broke Humanity. I don't know what
The
that
Epic of
about.
Humanity.
Oh yeah.
Let's go to it.
Is that the Epic of Gilgamesh one? Because he does reference that in the in the talk, but
potentially. So he's got a wide ranging influence and it seems as if a Canadian has just ended that influence.
Yeah. True. Before we get into the actual debate itself, there are a few things that we need to talk about. The thing that kind of brought this into even more relevance in terms of like, because it was on the online apologetic sphere for mm-hmm. a little while. But if you knew about Billy Carson, you knew about Wes Huff, you knew that the debate happened and you knew that a bunch of crazy stuff happened. However, more recently, Wes Huff has gone on to Joe Rogan's podcast to mm-hmm. talk about what, because he had Billy Carson on forever ago and now he has Wes Huff on to talk about the debate and talk about mm-hmm. just the ancient texts of the Bible, New Testament specifically, but some Old Testament as well. And it was fascinating. I don't listen to Joe Rogan very often, if ever, really. I've only a few times I've actually watched some of them. But this one, I was captivated the whole time. Mm-hmm. Like, I love listening to Wes Huff talk. He definitely knows what he's talking about. But hearing him bounce off of Joe Rogan is fascinating. Mm-hmm. But it also brought into light some of the stuff that happened after this debate.
Yeah.
And a lot of that is the crazy legal battle that's kind of gone on. Josh, you might know a little more about it than I do. All I know is that he tried to sue Billy Carson and...
Billy Carson sued Wes.
It's still ongoing, isn't it? Or has he actually delivered the papers?
He's delivered papers. The thing is, though, is that because it's from America to Canada,
yep,
there's
extrajudicial stuff.
Yes, but there's also zero... 99.9% of the time, a lawsuit from one country to another over something like this never works.
Right.
And he has no ground to stand on.
Absolutely. He doesn't. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyway, I think he did it for, is it slander?
Or yes. Something. He put out a cease and desist to not use to Wes Huff. He proposed, this is the suit, that he's not allowed to use, any reference of him or the debate.
Right. Which he has no legal claim over whatsoever.
Yeah.
Because it's not his podcast. It's not Billy Carson's podcast. It's not. Once you talk into the physical space that is reality, your words don't really belong to you anymore. At least in terms of, like, if it was his own content, like his own channel, and he was using that, he might have a leg to stand on. But since it's Mark's, the third guy's, who I also don't know very much about, too, I will admit, his podcast and his, he's the one hosting it.
Yeah.
It means that Billy Carson doesn't really have any legal ground to stand on. But as far as I'm aware, Billy Carson's also sued Mark.
Yeah. So Mark was a longtime friend of Billy's. They live in the same gated community.
Yep.
Their sons play sports together and like hang out all the time and are still hanging out.
Apparently Billy Carson went to Mark's wedding.
Mark was in Billy Carson's wedding.
Oh, other way around.
Yeah. Like one of his groomsmen.
It's wild. I didn't know it was a groomsman.
Yeah. But. They were going to have a conversation just on the internet themselves because he's a Christian and Billy Carson has a lot to say about biblical. And they used to talk all the time about this stuff. And Mark was, very interested in everything Billy had to say.
Well, he's a truth seeker.
Yeah.
He wants to know more and more.
Yeah. And he's a new Christian. And
very new. Yeah.
And so he was like, well, why don't we have this topic discussion? And then he started going through all the sources that Billy Carson usually references and found, hey, there's this guy that's really good with biblical texts and ancient Near Eastern texts. Why don't I?
Yeah, that's Wes Huff.
Yes. Wes Huff. Why don't I ask Billy if he could come on and discuss with us or maybe fly him down? He couldn't fly down to Florida, but he was willing to go on a Zoom call.
Billy Carson agreed to the conversation.
Billy Carson thought it was a good idea.
Yeah.
Willing. And it wasn't a debate. It was just a conversation between the three of them. And so Wes Huff was like, yeah, cause he had listened to some stuff that Billy Carson has said previously and had commented on it on his YouTube channel. In previous videos. And so then he jumps on and then this ensues.
Yes. And craziness fallout from there. And that's what kind of promoted into the mainstream and allowed Joe Rogan to kind of know about this Wes Huff guy.
The Streisand effect.
It is the Streisand effect. The more you try to cover something up, the more people get intrigued about it and the more it gets popular. And Wes Huff then gets invited onto Joe Rogan's podcast, onto multitude of podcasts with both people he knows, people he doesn't know. So many people have covered this podcast or this debate.
Yeah.
And at least our hope is that we can add a little bit into that while not trying to captivate on the whole sensationalism. That's not the point of this.
We don't want this to just be a view booster for us.
Exactly. Or else we would have done it the day after. Sure. I agree. We tend to be very dry. And that doesn't...
No, I think there's some interesting things we could say about this podcast or this specific episode.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. One more thing before we get into it, because we are going to cover some of the things that are actually said in the debate and people's positions, their rhetoric, stuff like that. But how do you guys feel the debate went? Because I've seen different people talk online about, like, Wes Huff... Because as much as we call it a conversation, and it is, and both Mark and Wes have called it a conversation, because to be honest, that's kind of what it was, and that's how it's structured. But even Wes Huff put up the video, and it's called a debate. It is a debate in terms of they are battling ideas. How do you guys feel about how people walked away from this before even the whole legal battle stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Does Wes look good because of this conversation, both rhetorically and as a Christian? Does Mark look bad? Does he look good? And Billy Carson, what would we expect Billy Carson to do after this? Hindsight tells us we know what happened, but what do you guys feel?
I mean, I think that if you honestly watch it, it feels a little bit like Billy's coming out swinging right to begin with, right? Like just kind of grandstanding his positions, being, you know, overly confident in his positions. He does not really expect to get as much kickback as he did. I think the whole thing would have went a lot better if it was structured like a debate. Absolutely. But the problem that Billy Carson has had is he's gone on all these different podcasts and he said, no Christian will debate me. Nobody will talk to me about these subjects. And like, he got caught, dude, because he comes into one conversation and I think he kind of gets dumpstered.
Okay. I agree. He gets dumpstered in terms of his ideas. Yes. I wouldn't put it that extreme, but yeah.
His ideas are presented and you get to see how fragile he is, but his actual positions were standing on a lot of his confidence and not on ground.
Well, he claims to be like a reliable historical source. And when Wes comes out with big hitting questions, like what's your methodology? Actually, this thing that you reference in dozens of videos is not what you think it is. And actually in this podcast, he corrects the Codex Sinaiticus is not what he actually means when he's referring to something, either because he's lying or because he just misappropriated it. But either way, he's been confidently saying that the Codex Sinaiticus was this thing that said that there's no crucifixion of Jesus, stuff like that.
That is the crux of this whole debate. Yeah, there we go. Is the discourse over the Codex Sinaiticus, because what Billy Carson is doing is he's calling it the Sinai Bible, which actually the fact he calls it the Sinai Bible may indicate that he studies it from a Muslim point of view, which could be the reason he thinks that, because Christian scholars don't call it that. They call it Codex Sinaiticus.
Yeah.
And I even watched some follow up on it between Mike Winger, Inspiring Philosophy, and Wes Huff. And all of them were like, yeah, we've never heard it called that. Like, no scholars call it that. But yeah, so the Codex Sinaiticus, you'll find that Billy calls it out and says, hey, I'm not saying that Christ wasn't crucified, but Codex Sinaiticus, the earliest known Bible, says that, says that he may not have been crucified. And then, you know, follows that Wes Huff is like, hey, that's not true. Here's Codex Sinaiticus. It doesn't say any of that.
Yeah.
Next question, please.
Imagine you're a Christian who doesn't know what the Codex Sinaiticus is, or you're not willing really to look it up because you don't, for whatever reason, that's a big word, whatever.
Yeah.
What Billy Carson says, and he says the earliest known Bible we have, which again, the Codex Sinaiticus is not the earliest known Bible. It is one of the earliest, if not the earliest, codified Bibles that we have, whole Bibles that we have. But we do have older manuscripts from and collections like the Muratonian canon and stuff like that, which are older, but don't contain all of the books of the Bible. Anyway, Codex Sinaiticus, when you say that Jesus wasn't crucified, that immediately goes, whoa, what? What do you mean? What does it actually say? And then you keep listening to some of Billy Carson's stuff, who I've watched a fair amount of his videos at this point. Rhetorically doesn't just say it's wrong. He says, it may or may not. However, there is some good reason to believe this, or there are some prominent newer scholars who say these things, and it kind of leans towards this historical or scientific idea that actually there is this new secret knowledge that's come out that people are latching onto and scientists are starting to whatever discover without actually proving any of it. And part of this whole debate is that Wes Huff is the scientist who is proving what he says is true. Yeah. Why do you think that Billy Carson agreed to this conversation? Do you think he didn't think that Wes Huff was a big deal, or do you think he could just overwhelm him with ideas?
I think, how do I put it? I'm going to make an example with the UFC. There'll be cases where, or like with boxing, where you can accept a fight And you can get far by accepting the right fights. You can sure. match up your skills against theirs, or they're not as good as you, or you have an advantage here. And you can set it up so that you can fill up your score, but you were always jumping into fights you knew you would win.
Yeah.
Yep.
And then you get to a point where you get higher up and you can't do that anymore.
Right.
Everyone's better than you.
Yeah.
And there are no weaklings at that level. And I think Wes, Billy Carson got so big because he was going on these podcasts and like Joe Rogan, Andrew Schultz, these other guys, and they knew he wasn't a trustworthy figure, but they wanted to hear what he had to say because right. they like weird, interesting ideas.
Yeah.
And he took capital on that. Mm-hmm. Whereas with the Wes Huff conversation, it's like a UFC fighter taking a last minute fight when someone drops out, where I don't have time to train. I don't have time to think about this. I'm just going to do it because it's a big deal.
Right.
And then you jump in and you realize, oh, I'm not playing the same game anymore.
Yeah. Do you think that the fact that this was a essentially last minute ask on Wes Huff to do it the day after they asked him to or whatever, that gave Billy Carson more of a leaning of, okay, I can do this. He won't know enough about what I'm going to talk about.
He isn't prepared.
Yeah. Basically tying one arm behind Wes Huff's back.
Yeah.
As Joe Rogan puts it, as if you had just woken up at 4 a.m. and someone asked you, what does this all mean? Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he woke up the guy who's an actual expert in this stuff and could do it from asleep.
Yeah. And as Joe Rogan said, if you wake me up right now, I can roundhouse kick you through a wall.
Yeah.
Because I've been training my whole life for that.
Yeah. Yep.
Literally. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Mm-hmm. We'll talk about how people say certain things. Wes Huff does come out pretty good in this conversation. Not just in terms, like the way I would put it is that Wes Huff doesn't just, it's not about bashing and debunking and debunking and doing all of the debate bro stuff. Because Wes Huff isn't a debater. And it's pretty obvious based on the way that he talks in this. He is a historian. Mm-hmm. He knows what he's talking about. But rhetoric isn't at the forefront of his mind. But as some later, like Capturing Christianity or some other podcasts I've listened to where he goes on, I didn't listen to which one, the Andrew Schultz
one? No, Andrew Schultz, the other one. I think is one that he's going to do later.
David.
That one. Yeah. Sorry, I got you two mixed up. But
no, it's okay.
He goes on podcasts and talks about like, he knows that who Billy Carson is and he knows what he likes to talk about and stuff like that, but he's not going to try to just debunk everything he says, but rather Billy Carson will talk himself into his own defeat. Mm-hmm. And that is the quote unquote debate strategy that he went into this, that he would let Billy Carson speak, say what he has to say fully, and then say what he believes the historical actual alternative is. Mm-hmm. I think it worked very well. There were a few times where either Mark or Billy Carson cut him off from a few times. And Wes Huff only cuts off Billy Carson, I think, once. But then he apologizes immediately because he's not trying to.
Mm-hmm.
And Wes Huff comes off as though he is actually just trying to say what is true rather than trying to prove Billy Carson wrong. And that works so well for this conversation.
Yeah.
The number one thing that I've seen of Christians, but also non-Christians point out is, again, how well he conducted himself.
Yep.
And on the
patiently, respectfully. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in love.
And the inspiration for that and the thing that people keep quoting is 1 Peter 3:15, which is, but in your hearts, revere Christ as Lord. Always be prepared to give an answer to anyone who asks you to give a reason for the hope that you have. But do this with gentleness and respect, keeping a clear conscience so that those who speak maliciously against your behavior in Christ may be ashamed of their slander. For it is better if it is God's will to suffer for doing good than for doing evil.
Yep. And like you said, Wes Huff has actually like basically quoted that before. Yeah. That's what he believes in his life.
And in the internet age where having the most outrageous claim or being salacious or being the most eye-popping and polarizing, he spoke
about optics, right?
Yeah. He spoke clearly and respectfully, and even in the conversation, constantly goes to Billy Carson and respects him by saying, I know you've read a lot of this stuff. Yep. I know you've been to these places. Yep. I know I've seen your videos. You've studied this for hours.
But what's your methodology?
But what's your methodology?
And he'll give him a deeper question while also showing him the respect. And I think that's a really good strategy.
Yeah.
Not just like, oh, strategy, he's trying to win. But if you're trying to have a conversation with someone, Billy Carson is not a debater as well. Mm-hmm. But while Wes Huff is not a debater, Billy Carson's also not a debater. I do think he's really good with rhetoric. He knows what to say and how to say it often. But in terms of like a live, like conflicting of ideas, he knows the surface level stuff very well and can say it. But if say Wes Huff came out and just like fire, you're wrong. Here's why. And kept interrupting and whatever, it would make Wes Huff look bad. And I don't think Wes Huff was like, oh, I know that, therefore I'm going to stand back. It's simply that Wes Huff does seem to be an actual good guy who's trying to actually have a conversation and maybe even convince at first, maybe Billy Carson, but later on it seems Mark.
Yeah.
He's trying to convince Mark that what Billy Carson is saying, there's something deeper there.
Yeah. Well, and Joel, in our Second Rate Saints group chat, this whole debate was huge for you.
Yeah.
I'd like to hear more of what your thoughts were about that, the conduct and
the conduct. Yeah. So I get pretty upset at online discourse a lot of times. Mm-hmm. This one avoided a lot of that for me, right? Okay. Like this was very reasonable. It was very level-headed. I didn't feel like anyone was getting yelled at. I didn't feel like we were going towards a sensational thing. I mean, you have to watch the whole thing realizing that Billy Carson wasn't going to post this and Wes Huff wasn't going to post this. This was Mark's podcast. Mm-hmm. So like both of the two most extreme opinions really didn't have a say on whether it came out or not. And so I think one of the biggest things... is just that he did have an answer. And so you said that he was very calm and didn't correct even when it was so glaringly obvious that Billy didn't know. Not that he didn't know. He was volunteering an opinion without actually volunteering information.
Yeah.
You know?
He was showing his hand a bit
too much. An example
of
this, and I think Wes Huff was like, this was... Mm-hmm. He's playing chess, not checkers, right? Like when he starts talking with the Enuma Elish, and it's like, well, you know, it's word for word Genesis,
right?
And it's Enuma Elish and Genesis are word for word. And you know what? We talked about that in our Genesis episode that there are commonalities between the two.
He even brings up the polemic idea a little bit. Yeah, I don't know if it's in this podcast
Billy Carson
or in one of the different ones.
Doesn't bring up the polemic.
No,
Wes Huff definitely does. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Billy Carson doesn't seem to. No genre, right? And that's is what it is. But what he does is beautiful because he asks Billy Carson if he's ever read the Enuma Elish. And rather than say, yeah, I've read so-and-so, he actually says, yeah, I did a lecture on it. And so it's like, okay, you already know this is an issue because he's not saying, yes, I'm familiar with the source. It's, no, I am the source, right? And so Wes Huff's immediately like, okay, tell us the story. And it's not combative, but then immediately Billy Carson just shows that he has really no metric for what views are compatible with what. Because he starts telling like a space age story about the Enuma Elish, which if you've read the Enuma Elish, it's a cosmology. But it's definitely not.
He gets
about,
this planet idea kind of out of nowhere. And admittedly, I haven't seen everything he's put out. There's probably some source that he thinks proves that Tiamat was a planet that crashed into the other planets or whatever.
Yeah.
Or Marduk was.
No, it's violently oscillating between metaphor and reality. That's what he's doing.
I agree. Yeah.
Well, and this is the point that people... need to kind of, this is what's important when you listen to Billy Carson, is you need to actually know the sources to understand that what he's telling you when Wes Huff asks him, so what is the Enuma Elish story?
Yeah.
Right. He's not telling you what is written down.
Yeah.
Like if you were to ask us, what is Genesis 1? Yeah. We would say, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth.
Yeah.
The earth is formless and void.
Yeah.
There's 7 days of creation. We would tell you the order. Mm-hmm. God makes man. There's a series of events where God says, and it was good, and it was good, and it was good, and then it was very good, and we would tell you the story.
Yeah.
Not me, who believes it's a temple procession.
Right. Yep.
I wouldn't tell you, oh, it's a temple procession where you see it's done over 7 days for the inauguration of the temple that is the earth.
Yep. Because then someone reads Genesis and is like, where the heck, what the heck do you mean? That's not what's here.
Yeah. And whereas he just straight goes to his interpretation as that's what it's saying.
Yes. And I think that that comes from his lack of knowledge about the actual subject and more his surface level interpretations of it, which if you couldn't gather, we don't like Billy Carson too much. I think he has been a bit damaging to a lot of people's faith.
Yeah.
I don't think he, and we'll get into it a little bit, but I think he believes what he says.
I don't think so. I think he's disingenuous. I'm 50-50 on it. I never got the impression. So here's the thing. I have a little bit more context for this. After the Wes Huff kind of Billy Carson debate, they kind of split off, went their separate ways. Wes Huff got threatened with a lawsuit, and then Billy Carson went live on Twitch.
Yeah.
Which is crazy. And you watch it, and some of the stuff he says, where it's like, yeah, you get your 15 seconds of fame, you make the money, but I want to make you spend all those millions in court because I'm the goat. And that's what he says.
Yeah.
And I'm like, okay, so this is a power trip for you. This is not an academic pursuit.
I mean, I agree with that.
Here's the thing. If you pursue your ideology can be beaten. If you pursue truth, there is no failure. There's only growth.
Mm-hmm.
That's the point, right? And so Billy Carson falling in his ideology, falling in this, you know, house of cards worth of, you know, research to somebody who's actually done the work and built on a solid foundation. Wes Huff never learned anything from this, right?
Well, actually, he did. So he mentions that the argument, the one of the arguments that Wes Huff made, he mentions this on Patrick Bet-David and on Joe Rogan, where he's never heard of that, of certain rejections of the gospel from anyone else.
Yeah.
And he's one of the directors of Apologetics Canada. Which means he's heard every argument against Christianity.
Every argument, yes.
And so he was, and him and Mike Winger, like you were saying, were like, we've never heard someone call it the Sinai Bible.
Yeah.
We've never heard of this argument about the resurrection, of the denial of the resurrection. Mm-hmm. And the only thing he can prescribe to it is that maybe he read the alternate ending to Mark.
Yeah.
And it doesn't talk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then just left it at that, and that's the only thing he can come up with,
right,
which, as we've brought up in the podcast, the alternate ending of Mark is depending on the, because of thousands of years of translation and multiple sources for the biblical text, there is an alternate ending that goes back to the earliest days,
potentially two alternate endings.
Have you seen some of the critiques of Wes Huff?
Yes.
Did you see the Cosmic Skeptic coverage?
Yes. Did you see Gavin Ortland's
response
to Cosmic Skeptic's response to Wes Huff?
Let's take it back a couple levels. I have not seen Cosmic Skeptic's response. What do you mean by criticisms against Huff? Because I would even levy some of my own, but they're very minor.
It's mostly to do with his Rogan interview. Because that kind of reached more people than this.
Yeah.
Well, although I think more people should watch this. Not to mention, I don't think there's any missteps in this one. Like, I haven't seen any critiques of his actual content. Conduct, sure, whatever. It kind of sucks that his camera gives out for a minute or two, but there's no real.
I don't know. It kind of lets Carson cope for a little bit.
It does. I think one of the saddest things about this is the way that. I think Mark is being led astray by Carson.
He was.
And believes that he's having these Christian conversations.
Yes.
That have no basis.
100%
and
true.
And we did say that Mark was a new Christian, and that's not true, because he talks about, like, studying C.S. Lewis back in the day.
Yeah, right? he had a new faith experience that reinvigorated him into Christ, but he doesn't have a very solid footing in it.
Yeah.
I guess I would say he's a young Christian more so than a new Christian.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. Yeah.
The other thing is, so on the Patrick Beck David podcast, Mark comes onto the podcast for the last 5 minutes with Wes Huff.
Cool.
So he, because Patrick Beck David's podcast is also in Florida, because Wes and and Mark have now become friends because of this.
Cool.
And Mark is now studying with Wes.
Really?
Yeah. So like he's getting information and books and sources and help from Wes on where to go.
Wow.
And Wes just gives a glowing review of Mark for everything he's done in this.
Yeah.
And he says he's one of my new favorite people.
Yeah.
And actually presents, because he's getting so much flack for interrupting, speaking too much.
He does do that a lot.
Yeah. Despite it being, it would, yeah. But the, but Wes Huff defends him in that, and that's really cool. And he also acknowledges that he spoke too much on PBD's podcast.
Does, yeah.
But then also, both of them have mentioned just how many letters and messages they got from people saying, because of Mark inviting Wes Huff, I've now been pulled out of the darkness that was Billy Carson's media, and I'm now returning to Christianity.
And Mark kind of represents, like we said, he was being led astray a bit by Billy Carson, who he's just now, he had this church experience with his wife. He talks about it in the last like 20-ish minutes of the episode, which I think quite a few people probably skipped over, because once Billy Carson leaves, there's not as many reasons to listen to him. But Mark, I've seen the actual debate twice. And both times I had a very different view of who Mark was. The first time, I thought this was just a straight debate. He's the host. He's doing the big...
He's a moderator.
I've watched a fair amount of debates online, and they have a very either one way or another way that moderators tend to go. Either they're very hands-off, or they try to guide the conversation, whereas Mark felt like he was trying to insert himself into the conversation constantly, which isn't what the debate is about. It's not, like you said, it's not really a debate. It's more of a conversation.
And he even said, I wasn't a moderator.
Yeah.
He acts like a moderator based on the, if you come with understanding it is a battling of ideas, he is a moderator in that sense, but it's his podcast. They're having a conversation, and he kind of is the neutral third party in this that cares about what both have to say. He likes Wes Huff even before the episode. That's why he was like, oh, we should have him on. He sounds cool. He didn't know too much about him, but he's like, oh, there's an actual historian, whatever. Whereas Billy Carson's like was one of his close friends. And throughout the episode, you can see that Mark doesn't really turn on Carson at all. He's a very close friend of his. He even talks about how much he respects Billy Carson and how he's appreciative that Wes Huff can respect him. And he just wants everybody to respect each other. Totally fine. Totally fair. It gets very grating on the first time I watched it, that he would talk for very long, very slowly about what he wanted to talk about that wasn't as pertinent to what they were debating or whatever. But as it goes on, and especially that last 20 minutes where he talks to Wes Huff about his experience, how he feels about God, and how this kind of, this has changed his worldview a little bit on like, oh, there's actually deeper knowledge here that could be found. And Wes Huff is like, I love that. You're great. He's actually just talking to him like he's a friend. And he's like, the one thing I would be careful with you with is just be careful what Billy Carson says. I respect him. I love him. He's a great guy.
Yeah.
But just be careful, because not everything he says is, or at least just do the research yourself. Stuff like that. He tries to encourage Mark rather than dissuade him from listening to Billy Carson. And that's kind of his attitude for the whole episode. But Mark, after this, I don't know if he has really said too much about his relationship with Carson, but we know that Billy Carson has basically cut him off from his life completely.
Their kids still hang out, which is important to him.
That's good.
And he's really wanted to keep the drama down for his family.
That's good.
And Wes Huff was like, absolutely, I'll take all the heat. Give me the episode. I'm releasing it.
And Mark is just he kind of feels like an audience insert.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Joel, go. You were about to say something.
Oh, I was just going to say,
kudos to him for even letting it be released, right? Because what he could have also done is just not release the episode and then not went through with all this kind of stuff. But he is somebody that even though it seems like every, you know, podcaster has like pursue truth, right? Like that's kind of their empty platitude that they'll put out. He clearly, if he doesn't mean it, he's living it, right? Because he's like, you know, I think that ideas should be able to stand on their own two feet, and gives out the debate or the conversation or whatever.
Yep.
Excellent stuff.
It's fantastic.
Are there any specific points you guys want to really hammer down? Like, what was your favorite point that he made? Huff? The whole conversation. Anyone. Even if it's like the Emerald Tablets of Thoth, which I don't think you talked about in this one, but...
Not as much, but... No, the Emerald Tablets thing is very funny, though.
They've been getting a lot of light on the internet the last year.
True. They shouldn't be.
No.
But,
no, here's the thing. Controversy like this makes it so that people who know study, and then they illuminate this. That's the good truth.
That's true. The Emerald Tablets of Thoth are fake, if you didn't know. Mm-hmm. And I feel like even though I'm not a textual scholar, I can say that fairly confidently.
Yeah.
The two things that stick out to me in this actual debate are the Dogon tribe stuff and the Enuma Elish stuff, at least in Billy Carson's claims. And specifically, both of them, I think, are wild. And I've listened to a bit of Billy Carson's stuff on it. I mean, it sounds like your typical conspiracy theory stuff, which isn't necessarily a bad thing. If you care about that stuff, that's fine. But he talks about it. He says things, especially about Thoth or the Enuma Elish stuff. And it's like, he makes assertions without backing them up. He'll jump from topic to topic and you'll talk about it. And as soon as Wes Huff tries to ask a question, he goes, why are we even talking about this? Mm-hmm. There's so much other things we can talk about. That's like an actual quote from the, from the debate.
Yeah. Let's talk about the Old Testament now. We're not talking.
Which he's not. Yeah. He is an expert in it in the, what we would consider to be expert. Mm-hmm. He would not call himself. Wes Huff is an expert in New Testament and Greek studies.
Yeah.
Textual criticism.
Yeah. And scribal culture specifically. Yes. Yeah.
Like he's talked about how he has studied, Plutarch, Xenophon and the Bible, obviously, but there's more than just that. And in all of them, he's trying to find the truth from those things. So when Billy Carson tries to go to the more esoteric Old Testament stuff, Wes Huff doesn't want to get sucked down that rabbit hole. And he comes into this knowing a fair amount about Billy Carson. And you can see that when he asks him and keeps bringing back to what is your methodology? Mm-hmm. Where are you getting this information from? Mm-hmm. Not where are you getting this information from, which is, I think, what most people would do in a debate like this. Mm-hmm. So they'd be like, oh, where are you getting that from? Oh, I don't think that's a good source. And then it becomes my word versus your word. Mm-hmm. And Billy Carson's audience is going to be on his side. And Wes Huff's is just going to call the other side crazy people. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. He doesn't ask him where he gets it from. He lets it stand on its own two feet and just asks him, how do you know it's right? Mm-hmm. Which is the methodology question.
Yeah.
And I think that is not only the crux of the conversation, but I think it's the biggest takeaway from everybody's side. And I think that's what actually caused Billy Carson to be so mad. Mm-hmm. As soon as he starts talking about methodology, Billy Carson's added, it started with the Sinai
Bible,
the Codex Sinaiticus, in terms of him getting a little more upset and trying to change the subject. Mm-hmm. But when he brings up methodology, Billy Carson's attitude changes, his body changes. He keeps the same facial expression the whole time. And I think that's on purpose. And he keeps the same like tone of voice the whole time. And again, I think that's on purpose. But he clearly gets mad. He's like, why are we talking about this? Why don't we just move on? Mm-hmm. Or there's so many other things. And he brings up the Enuma Elish. He brings up the Emerald Tablets. He brings up the Dogon tribe. Mm-hmm. Anyway, sorry, I've talked for too long.
No, it's okay. So to specify, we've brought it up before. But so the Enuma Elish is a ancient Near Eastern text of Babylonian, Akkadian, Sumerian origin. There's multiple versions or related stories. The Epic of Atrahasis, the Epic of Gilgamesh. Various things. They all reference each other. And they did play an influence on the biblical text in a polemic sense, which we've discussed in the Genesis story.
And they talk about on the podcast as well.
Yes. And the biblical story makes reference to them because it's countering those ideas presented, which were common, which because the Epic of Gilgamesh, the Enuma Elish, all these stories are older they influenced as the dominant religious culture all the way to Turkey and up to Egypt. So that whole central Middle Eastern section. The story simply is very long, but the arc of the story is there was nothing. And then there was two gods, a male and a female, Apsu and Tiamat, one of which was represented by fresh water and one salt water, or order and chaos.
Right.
Salt water was Tiamat, who was depicted as a Leviathan, a dragon, multi-headed. And then you have Apsu,
super order, cool.
Super awesome. And then they have two kids, which are a male and female goddess, Lapsu, Lamu and Lahamu.
Yep.
And then they then have 900 god children.
Yep.
Many of which are called Enki, Iana.
And AI, I think. Right?
Are you going to name 900 gods right now?
No, just the major ones. Nana, Sin.
Yeah.
Yep.
Various ones. Very similar to, you could say, the Greek gods or the Egyptian gods, where there's a pantheon.
Yep.
Anyways.
Tiamat's a little upset about how loud they are.
Tiamat doesn't like how they're disrupting their life and tells Apsu to go deal with it because he's a sit-at-home dad.
Yep.
That's my inference from it. Anyways, he speculates, well, why don't we just kill them?
Yep.
Enki, the head god, the firstborn son of the gods, heard this. And so when Apsu was sleeping, he goes and he kills him, the father, because he doesn't hear that Apsu says, no, that's actually a bad idea. kills his father.
Yep.
Takes the halo and the tablets of destiny, which were theological images of sovereignty and power.
Nice.
Yeah. Takes the halo, forgets the tablets of destiny.
Okay.
So then he goes back.
I forget that part.
Yes. Okay. Then he goes back. Tiamat's angry and creates 11 to 15 demons.
Yep.
One of which is a Leviathan.
Yep.
Kingu.
Kingu.
Yep. Yeah. And the 900 gods.
The actual text does not stop saying what they are and how great they are.
Yes,
it's like seven times. It repeats the exact same five lines or whatever. Yeah. It's very long.
It repeats them. There is a constant battle between the gods and the demons, and they are in a stalemate. They cannot beat the gods and Tiamat, their mother. So
Marduk,
Enki's son,
from the top rope.
Yes, Enki's son Marduk has not been fighting in the battle because this is his grandparents, and he could care less. But Marduk is special because he has eyes all around his head and has magic words. And they make
something about fire too, but yes. I don't really understand.
Enki tells Marduk, his son, please join the battle. We'll give you anything.
Yep.
And he says, cool, make me the head god. I get the tablets of destiny and the halo of power.
Make me sovereign over all the gods.
Yeah. Yep. And you have to give me your weapons. Your special weapons of war.
Yeah.
And so he takes the chariot from one of the gods and one of the gods' nets, and one of their bows. And while they're fighting the demons without Tiamat, he goes and challenges Tiamat himself.
Yep.
And while she gets ready to breathe fire on him, he fills her with his magic words coming from his mouth, and he descends upon her, catches her with his net so she can't fly away.
She smashes her over the head, I think, as well.
Yeah, destroys her and cuts her in half.
Yep.
Half of her body becomes the land. Half of her body becomes the sea.
To split the waters.
Yep. Yeah. And then the rest of her blood seeps into the ground and forms humanity.
And the gods aren't very happy about that.
Yes. But Marduk says, aha.
Opportunity.
Opportunity. And
capitalism
to make temples and cities for the gods so that they don't have to work anymore for food.
Mm. Yeah.
And that's generally the story of the Enuma Elish. Yep.
Which was proclaimed at the beginning of every Babylonian New Year, right?
Yes. Yeah. And you see references to this story throughout the Bible. In Job, the Leviathan that is mentioned and the behemoth are direct references to the Enuma Elish.
Yeah.
Satan being a serpent is a direct reference to this. The creation story in Genesis 2 follows the same word choices and patterns of speech of the beginning of the creation story. So Anuma Elish means when on high, mm-hmm. which just means in the beginning.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
It also should be noted that not only with his, not only was this the big thing that was happening, like the big creation mm-hmm. story, one of them during Moses' time when he's writing Genesis, Babylon and Ur and the Sumer, like that area mm-hmm. of Mesopotamia is where Abraham was from. Now, yes. not Babylon itself.
He was from a city, the city of Ur.
Ur, which is not too far and would have been a vassal state of mm-hmm. the Babylonian city, potentially when Abraham was alive.
Yeah. Well, and the Enuma Elish changes depending on where they find the copy and which city.
Yes.
Because
right.
Marduk's city is Babylon. Mm-hmm. And
it's also why it's the most popular, is because they're the ones who conquered everybody else.
We founded Nashurbanipal. So it's like, yeah, Babylon yeah. was his thing. Right. Yeah.
Right.
But there, it'll change depending on who is the god that defeated Tiamat historically, yeah. depending on which city was currently in charge.
Yeah.
And so, for example, Ur was the city of Nana Sin, who was the god who would partake in the death rituals. Mm. And he has a line where he would come to judge the living and the dead.
Mm. Right. Which is fascinating for Bible stuff.
Yeah.
And even in the Enuma Elish, we can see parallels and ideas. As Billy Carson talks about, there are words from these creation myths that he can see in the Bible.
Yeah.
But that, and then Mark Westhoff's like, oh, which ones? And he says, the separation of the waters. And he goes, that's all you have? Mm-hmm. I could give you more than that. And he does in some other podcasts too. He's like, there is more than that. However, yeah. it's what it's saying about them and how it's using it. It's not yeah. just copying those words, it's actually inverting them.
Yeah. And as we've mentioned, that's called a polemic, and mm-hmm. it's a counter. You're saying that idea is actually wrong.
Yep. Yes. When Marduk yeah. literally tears the body, cuts the body of Tiamat in half and puts half in the sky and half on the ground to separate the chaotic waters that the gods live in, as the heaven and the earth, how can we not see that as God separating, being above the waters, separating them, creating mm-hmm. the earth and creating the heaven and putting distance between them so that there can be dry ground in mm-hmm. between. Like there are obvious connections there. However, what does the Bible say about it? And how does the Enuma Elish use it? It's clear that the Bible is saying something using that idea, if it's using that idea, mm-hmm. which we do believe it on this podcast, and is subverting it basically.
Yep.
Yeah. Very powerfully.
Yeah. And those differences are key.
Yes.
And so
the point.
Yeah. And so that just lends to this idea that Westhoff brings up, which is what is your methodology? Yeah. With a methodology is the patterns and practices that one employs to discern how a text or operation should be read.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
How do you verify that it is a truthful document?
Yep.
What is the veracity?
Yep.
of the object.
He brings up words like verisimilitude, which yeah. obviously Billy Carson has no idea what that means. He doesn't even know what methodology means.
Dude, you must have practiced it to be able to say that, because I've been trying and I can't do
it's
it.
It's a fun word. I love it. Verisimilitude?
Verisimilitude. Okay, I got yeah. it. That's and, actually...
Yeah. And so this comes word. Up with the next topic that you wanted to bring up, the Dogon tribe, which is there was a conversation where Billy Carson says, well, we have eyewitness sources of the resurrection.
An eyewitness. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Whereas
Westhoff says that, right?
And then Billy Carson says, well, we have eyewitnesses of the Dogon tribe stuff. And he says, okay. They're claiming to be eyewitnesses, but how do you know they're eyewitnesses?
Yeah.
And that's methodology.
Exactly. He asks them, now, I think this is one of the quote-unquote criticisms I have of Westhoff. It's not a criticism, really. I think it's not even a misstep. It's just you could have said something that's more profound to more people if you had not, instead of saying methodology every time or mm-hmm. using words like verisimilitude, although he does explain what that means, and using whatever, he's talking in the scholarly sense and using the words that the scholars use, which is effective at first, but then he keeps saying, okay, yeah, but what methodology are you using?
Which
is effective, but then with Billy Carson, Billy Carson either intentionally tries to shift or he misses the point because he doesn't really understand mm-hmm. what that means. And so if Westhoff brought it down a little bit, said, okay, how do you know that mm-hmm. what they're saying is true? or something like that, that would have changed how the conversation went.
Joel, we did an episode on biblically accurate angels and aliens.
Very much in the same line.
In the same line. Do you think the Dogon tribe had contact with aliens and knew where certain planets were?
Yeah, they're from Sirius A or B or something like that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, no. Like, what kind of question is that, right?
But don't you understand? They knew about the third or fourth star from the Sirius system that you could only know with super advanced astronomical charts.
That's
the claim.
It's wonderful how you keep twisting religious experience to prove scientific discoveries. It's very odd to me, because then what are you prioritizing, right? Like, he, even when he's talking about the Enumalish, he goes, it actually tells us about the creation of our solar system. It's like, okay, or you could think about what it's telling you, like, as the foundational document. Right. What is its primary purpose? Do you think that the ancient civilizations were very concerned about the, you know, creation of their solar system by creating a story when Earth didn't exist? It's
he would probably tell odd. You, well, yeah, obviously they lived in it. Duh.
Yeah, it's a firsthand experience that they had with aliens.
They came from there. Of course, they would know about it. Yeah.
I think that any integration of aliens into ancient cosmology is kind of just a thought experiment.
Unless it's true.
No.
They built the pyramids
top down. No, I think even
down.
If it is true, it's just a thought experiment.
No, you're right.
Right?
You are like, right. And you got me.
I don't know. So, no, I don't think the Dogon tribe is, you know, has eyewitness accounts. Because that's not what eyewitness accounts means.
No. Right. And also, looking into it, I can't remember the guy's name. Some French man. Because this was part of British Mali, or French Mali, or that kind of West Africa. I can't, or it was French Sudan back in the day. That's what they called it. But it's in the Mali region. And some dude, basically, some French explorer dude, goes over and talks with them. And it's based on his reports that he says these things happened. And then people later on go to them and they're like, oh yeah, that's what we believe. It's not known whether or not they were told this or if the man who went up to them recontextualized their ideas and was like, actually, we know this thing about astronomy. Your thing actually lines up with our astronomy. And then the Dogon tribe went, oh, that's fascinating. We're going to believe that wholesale now.
Yeah.
And either one could be potentially true. Either way, there are reasons to believe that the Dogon tribe didn't actually come from Sirius A.
Well, and
really,
and, well, and there's
I mean, beyond the obvious.
Well, the burden of proof is so clearly not on the people who just encounter a random tribe.
And that's the point is but that then, the Dogon tribe, if they have sources, right? Sorry, if they're making the claim that we know of these planets, and let's say they are correct that they knew a planet, a sun was there, a solar system where you can't see it with the naked eye. Then there are multiple ways that this could go down. One, the French guy told them. Two, it's been how many years since the invention of the telescope? 600 with Galileo?
Yep.
What are the chances in 600 years some guy hasn't traveled from Italy to Africa?
I mean, pretty high.
Two happened a lot.
True. To be fair, in the middle of Mali is not the most connected tribes with the outside world.
That's true. But people were doing some wild explorations at that time.
That is true.
Right. There was the Portuguese were traveling everywhere. The Spanish were traveling everywhere.
Yeah. Africa. Even word of mouth could have said that these things are true to this tribe. And yeah. Then, yeah.
Or again, history goes through waves. That area of the world may have had an advancement at some point and they saw it. All I'm saying is there's no evidence of any of these things. So we can't make a claim.
Yeah.
So to jump to the one claim that is
that proves the hypothesis true is, I mean, we would just call that bias.
Yeah, it's bias because we have no historical proof proving in any direction.
Mm. Yeah.
No evidence, which means if your methodology is I need evidence to make a claim, then you have no evidence for any of these ideas to say, one of these options is true.
But like Billy Carson does in the in the debate, but also afterwards and throughout all of his videos, he will, I don't want to say pivot, that is the debate term for it, but he will say, okay, that's one of one small thing. Look at all of these other reasons why. It's the, again, debate terms. I'm going into it as a debate. My brain immediately goes to the debate terms like, oh, like logical fallacies and stuff like that. But that's not really the point. He will many fakes argument it. He will say that, oh, actually, there's these many different reasons. Not all of them could be fake. Look at how many different options there are. Also, the Bible's wrong. And then Wes Huff is the one who can, well, the Bible's wrong about these things. It has some truth in it, but that, that truth is that God was, or Christ wasn't God. Angels and the spiritual realm aren't real. Actually, it's just aliens, which again, we get into the Forgotten Heavens, my, one of my favorite books and one of the only books I've read on angelology, actually, if you want to call it that, that bad says influence. That it is a bad influence that says that stars are angels, literally. That's where these ideas come from. Is jumping through different, I don't want to say surface level, but different ideas, collecting them together and saying, look at how many there are. Not either, not all of them could be false, it's what he believes, or that maybe there's a kernel of truth in all of them. If all things are worth pursuing and all things are spiritual, maybe they're all, it's the, I can't remember the word for it, but the idea that the idea that there's so many different religions out there and all of them have an aspect of truth. It's pluralism.
Religious pluralism.
Yeah. There's a new word for it or a term for it, but I can't remember what it is that says that, like, Buddhism, they're all Buddhism, Islam, Christianity, Taoism, all these different things have aspects of God in them, not just in like a pluralistic sense, but they're getting this idea from like some intrinsic idea in nature. Not, they can't all be wrong, so we shouldn't just throw them out wholesale. He kind of does that with the aliens sort of stuff. And like you said, alternate history. It's actually wild. I really like the fantasy novel he's writing.
The
Epic of Humanity?
Yeah, it's so cool. that the like the things he brings up and the Dogon tribe and stuff like that, that these... that the, they bring up these things and it's like, oh, this is so, it is really cool. I'm a big fan of the ideas. I just don't think they're true.
Yeah.
The fantasy, is he actually writing a fantasy novel?
No.
Oh, okay, cool. You just go, okay, cool. I understand.
I mean, he might be. I would definitely read that.
I don't think.
I mean, I think he has written a fiction.
Well, yes.
Has he?
What? Yeah. Everything.
I was a little, I was trying to make a joke, but it just came off like I was trying to be mean.
I was just kind of excited to think he was writing a fantasy world.
It would be awesome though.
Yeah.
I think he'd be better at sci-fi though.
So how do we, because we have a podcast, this is going to bring it down to the practical end.
How do we get Wes Huff?
No.
How do we get Billy Carson to
us? We learn from Wes Huff in our conversations? Like, for example, a long time ago when Joel brought up triple helix individuals.
Don't even talk about this, man.
And I said, why?
I don't bring this up. I can't believe you do this to me.
No, no, no. I need to be shamed because, and I said, I don't think you know what you're talking about.
And you were right.
Yes, but I could have said it a lot better.
That's true.
I don't think I deserved any better than that.
No.
You do, obviously. You're not a stupid person.
I said a stupid thing.
Why do you think that?
Because I had a friend when I was a kid, and he told me that he was going to get a syringe and start injecting animal DNA into chicken eggs. And then he goes, you know, Asian people have triple helix DNA. And so, like, these two things, for some reason, only one of these stuck. You know? And I shouldn't have thought that. But then I thought it's read it somewhere else,
And then you played Assassin's Creed, and
I didn't play Assassin's Creed. That's the other thing. Okay. Yeah.
That's the thing in Assassin's Creed.
Yeah.
I've never played any of them.
It's the aliens in Assassin's Creed have triple helix.
Aliens in Assassin's Creed.
You know we're getting close to the end because we're derailing pretty hardcore.
Well, no, but practically, how do we learn from Wes Huff in our conversations? Because there are times
you think that we shouldn't shame Joel for saying a triple helix?
There are times where we don't live up to that standard that we're called to in the word.
Exactly.
Yeah. How do we get better at that?
Yeah. And think about it this way. With the debate, he could have gone on and one can make the argument. This is the whole utilitarian argument.
of he could have gone in and bashed Carson and kept mm-hmm. a lot of people from believing what Carson believes. And in a way, he didn't. He obviously didn't bash him. He respects Carson. And I respect Carson, too. He does actually fly out to these places and talk with people. I do think he actually does believe what he believes. I'm like, I mean, okay. Joel might be on the other side of that. Yeah. I'm 50-50 more in the middle for that. Like, I've gone one way, I've gone another. The fact that he gets so upset so soon, the way he gets upset and the way that he talks makes it sound like he knows these things very well surface level, but that he's very emotionally invested into them, not just for his own. I think that the lash out, which I didn't actually know happened. That's wild. Yeah. They did that on Twitch.
It's like 3 hours long, dude. It's crazy.
Jeez.
Like there's no case after that. Yeah.
But well, I mean, you don't watch all 3 hours of it.
No. That'd be a nightmare.
We should do that.
But live. 3 hour live stream.
Yeah, we react live. Where we just hold our faces like the YouTube thumbnails.
Yeah.
But, he could have done that. Wes Huff could have gone on debate, debunked him, the whole time or whatever. But instead, what he did is he may have saved one man's faith and many more people's faith because of the way he approached it.
Yeah.
Immediately with Mark, who I think that he may have actually saved Mark from being led astray into these more Gnostic, not actual Christian beliefs, like that Jesus didn't die and rise again, stuff like that. But also just like we talked earlier, people have emailed him, people have emailed Mark, when he went on Joe Rogan and just talked about it, it opened up the world to see that Christians can be good conversators. You don't have to debunk everybody and to actually quote unquote win the argument. He wasn't trying to win. He was trying to do his best to, like you said, stand up for the truth.
Yeah.
And if the truth is real, won't it stand on its own 2 feet if you present it well? The way that he said is that you always come with a defense, like that First Peter thing. Come with a defense, say what you believe to be true and know it very well if they ask you.
With respect and kindness.
With respect and kindness and gentleness.
Yeah.
Which he did very well. And I think that's how we should approach not only our own conversations on this podcast, but our conversations with our fans who email us and whatever, but also just how we talk with people in general. Mm-hmm. It kind of opened up this idea that because I like to watch debates a lot. I like to watch people cover debates and talk about them and how they do. I've never really seen a debate quite like this, where it's not really a debate. He's just simply stating what is true, sometimes poking holes in what the other person says, but really he's trying to more reconcile ideas than take them away, which I don't know, that First Peter 3:15, I think that principle is going into a talk like that is way more effective for the kingdom. If we want to talk about efficaciousness, is that the right word? Whatever. Rather than like, but it just in terms of like doing the right thing, and based on this context, it does seem like it was the right thing, how he approached it.
Absolutely. Man, I would love to see a proper debate between these two, like with moderators and with, timed introductions and,
I think it might come, we talked about the presidential debates. It might come off like the presidential debate.
That'd be awesome, dude.
Yeah.
It'd be so good.
Where it feels like Wes Huff is beating up Billy Carson because he actually knows something about it.
No, I think if they both had time to prepare, you would get some really interesting conflicts.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
That's my take.
Joel, how do we apply this? How do we
make
Wes Huff our spirit animal?
That's not it.
Our patron saint.
How do we, in our discussions, practically apply the lesson that Wes Huff so expertly displayed?
Well, of course, there's the ready to be preaching in season and out of season, right? Mm-hmm. Like we've got that. But there's a couple of things. There's being willing to live above reproach, which is a big deal, right? Like he just kind of rocketed into the public eye, and nobody's got anything on him, right? Yeah. Like he's just been solid for a really long time. And I think that's pretty important. I don't know what to think of it, honestly, because it feels a little bit like I never knew what an actual biblical scholar was going to look like on Joe Rogan.
Yeah.
Right? Like it doesn't, we're in a pretty niche field of study and we're not
the always the most interesting people to talk to.
And he's
right?
in like the niche of niche studies.
Oh yeah, he's more niche than we are because we have textual analysis.
That's crazy.
Cool stuff.
Not crazy.
Though.
You know what I mean?
So like, what I'm trying to get at is like we've talked about having to our own debate between yes. two members of us
mm-hmm.
yes. about a theological
fight,
idea.
Fight. Yes.
Well, how do we listen to Wes Huff and when we do debates here between ourselves, mm-hmm. like one coming up will be about baptism or sacraments.
Mm. Yep.
How do we live that out and not fall into just polarizing, debunking?
That just reminds me of the Jordan Peterson's, you know, treat everyone as if they know something you don't.
Yeah.
Right. And I might actually go back to that quote that I heard earlier, which is that, you know, when you're fighting for an ideology, you can lose. When you're fighting for truth, you can only grow.
Yeah.
And that's, I'm there.
That's true.
Yeah.
And going into that is treating every, like with the Jordan Peterson one, is treating everyone with respect, that they might have something worth saying. And even if they don't, they're still a human being. And what people listening to are human beings.
I don't know if that's the spirit of the rule exactly. I think treating everyone as if they know something you don't is not necessarily a measuring of IQ or even like mm-hmm. usefulness. I think it's that you as yourself do not embody the entirety of human experience.
Yeah.
And to neglect sharing part of your human experience with somebody else is just going to debilitate you more than them.
Well, and it's the best.
That's the point he makes in the book. It's less about respect and more this right, like utilitarian like human experience. Yeah.
Yeah. And you come into it with a more of a humble
yeah.
kind of viewpoint.
Well, and it's the okay. better version of, there's that thing that we a lot of times got told in school, like someone I've seen in posters and stuff like that, like everyone's special.
Yeah.
Where it's no, everyone's unique.
Yes.
And the fact that everyone lives a singularly subjective experience mm-hmm. means that everyone does in fact know something or experience something that no one else has.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because of their perspective, their raising and stuff like that. And so there is always something you can learn from someone yep. if you're willing to listen.
Mm. And I know people at home will hear that and say, well, that's just equating things with like everybody's truth. It's your truth, but that's not what we're saying.
No.
Not everyone has quote unquote your truth that's just as valid as someone else's. When Wes Huff says this is what the text says, or we say something mm-hmm. like, hey, you should listen to what he says over Billy Carson, we're not just saying that's what our truth says and whatever. There is some objective standard there and something even if we're not talking about like debate tactics or just how to have conversation or whatever. That it's not just what we believe versus what someone else believes, but there is something there. And that something we believe is God,
yeah. mm-hmm.
of course, but truth, it's not my truth. It's just truth.
Yeah. There's a video that just came out today, actually, to date this episode, that Wes Huff released, after the Joe Rogan thing. And he goes, hey, I'm going to fact check myself because I made a couple of mistakes in the 3-hour conversation I had on the biggest podcast in the
world.
Wes
Huff debunks Wes Huff.
Yeah, that's what it's called. That's actually very good. Yeah. And I think there's some humility there with us.
Absolutely.
I mean, we started this thing, 3 years ago? When we hadn't even graduated from Summit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's wild to think about. And I don't agree with myself from last week, no less 2 years ago, right?
Well, I mean, one of us swapped denominations. Two of us actually have.
I thought two of us have, yeah.
Yeah, two of us now have.
Two and a half. Not me. I haven't really swapped denominations because I wasn't super attached.
Two and a third.
Two.
Oh.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. But that's important is because like you're saying, when you're searching for the truth is, as we confess from the Bible, the truth, Christ is the truth.
Yeah.
That is an eternal, constant, unmoving thing.
Yeah.
An unchanging thing. Everyone's moving around it, getting closer.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully.
And we are a fractured reflection of that truth.
Absolutely.
Yes. So
clamor to know a sliver of what is actually true.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's the gospel. You hear it in a second, you study for a lifetime, right? Like it's just, it's hard.
Yeah.
It's true. And we shouldn't hold anybody else's any single person's viewpoint or their opinions over the gospel truth. That includes Billy Carson. As an outro question to you guys, now we've talked a bit about the debate, and there's so many more people out there. Again, go listen to the debate. It's fascinating. Mm-hmm. And be nice to Mark. I didn't like him the first time, but like I said, the second time, I really appreciated why he was there. And his conversation he has with Wes is actually really impactful to me, at least. And I hope it is to you too. But Billy Carson says a lot of things, not just on the podcast, but just in general. What do you two think is the most interesting, or what you would wish is the or think is the most true? What interests you the most of what he says?
Of Mark?
No, of Billy Carson. Sorry,
Billy Carson.
If we're gonna say that everyone has something that I can learn from them, which is the one thing Billy Carson doesn't express it well. He doesn't express it in the way he should. And he's overshooting this point. But the one point that he brings up is that the current standard archaeological presentation of history is flawed. Mm-hmm. That there is something else going on.
What do you mean?
What I mean is one of the actual archaeological ideas that is being presented slowly, that is continuing to grow, is the pushing back of when civilization started.
Sure. Right.
And we're seeing that specifically in North America. We're in Southern Central America, and South America is having full cities the size of Babylon going back to 10,000.
Yeah. Right.
Which is pushing back agriculture and civilization 4,000 years earlier than Mesopotamia. And then also with Göbekli Tepe in Turkey, there is a civilization that has megalithic structures with the same century as the end of the Ice Age.
Right.
Which is 4,000, 5,000 years older than Sumer.
Yeah.
Where they have agriculture, where they have megalithic structures, thousands of people. And the weird thing is that their structures get less and less sophisticated as you get closer to the modern era.
Right.
They get worse. Which is not the way it should go. And so there are things like that he'll talk about. He's not the greatest speaker of that historical upturn in history.
It's very related and bias, and I would avoid it.
Yes.
Look at actual archaeologists talk about it.
Yes. Yeah. But again, from Billy Carson, that's the most important thing he's brought up, which he's just saying poorly.
Okay. Yeah. Joel, do you have anything that you think that you would either wish he says is true or you find very interesting? Or you think he's just right on something? Because I think he's right on some things.
I think that if you had to design a worldview that negated so many of the things I find interesting, it would be Billy Carson's.
Really?
It's not angels, it's aliens. It's not ancient people, it's aliens.
I would think you'd find that interesting.
No, it's so boring, man. Like, there's no... It completely neglects an entire dimension of existence, right? Like,
yeah, that's fair.
Like, that's how I see it. I don't see a ton of redeemable qualities from it. What's something? Maybe I'll stick with the alternate history thing. And I think... Truth doesn't have to hide from light, right? So I think what he's doing is he's running over to the nearest bit of truth he can find and yelling as loud as he can, right? That's kind of how I see it. So I'm hoping that the result of this is that people do go to Göbekli Tepe and begin excavating themselves. More. I mean, that's the same reason I like Graham Hancock, but I do think Graham Hancock is a much more balanced individual.
Yes. He doesn't even like...
He's a journalist turned archaeologist, and the archaeologists don't love his conclusions.
Okay.
That's a simple way to put it, and I think he actually has a voice and a space in archaeology, but I don't think that Billy Carson has quite the same.
No.
And not for archaeologists.
Graham Hancock says that Billy Carson is not someone he would trust on the sourcing.
Nope.
Fair enough. Yeah. But I mean... He could say that, but Billy Carson is using Graham Hancock's stuff. So
he's also very popular. So he's popularizing those ideas.
Well, and
in a not
Billy Carson way. Is using Graham Hancock's ideas the same way he uses the Enuma-Elish.
Yes. Yeah.
Taking whatever he wants in the
middle. I love how he says that Tiamat is a planet and that Marduk, whose name was, he says, is originally something
Nibiru.
Else. Nibiru crashed into Tiamat and that created the planets, and how that's actually a thing on how the universe was created and the moon came from it and stuff like that.
It's related to an idea of Planet X that was on the other side of the sun, always at the same time as Earth.
Mm.
So you can never see it.
Yep.
And that sometimes Nibiru would cycle through or fart out beyond the Oort cloud and come close to Earth.
Yep.
And the, what's the term for the giants in Babylon?
Anunnaki?
No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Anunnaki. The Anunnaki, which is the name for the all tall half gods and gods in the Babylonian religion. It gets weird. that they would jump from one planet to the other, take our populace and use them to mine gold, or that they're mining. The reason we love gold is because we're genetically modified people and that they'll come and pick it up when they're on their way back.
This is fantastic.
Because they need it for, like atmosphere protection because their atmosphere is failing.
Oh, I've never heard that. That's fascinating. I like what he says about how the inner Oort cloud and the asteroid belt are the
remains.
The remains of Tiamat and stuff like that. It's like, oh, this sounds awesome. I also wish what he said about Lemuria was true. If you don't know, Lemuria is Atlantis, sort of.
Yeah.
This idea of a proto civilization that sank into the sea somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't have to be the sea. It could also have been aliens that went back into space.
It's the eye of the Sahara. Anyways.
Yeah, I was going to say, I prefer Hancock's interpretation of it. And that's the thing. We're not that far from having a love for these topics, but I just feel like the misuse and abuse of evidence by Billy Carson kind of makes it unusable.
I love lore.
No, lore's good. That's like we were saying. It would make a great fantasy novel.
Yeah.
To be like, and the outer asteroid belt is the body of a dead god. And it's like, oh man, this is Warhammer. That's what this is. But
even if I don't think what he says is true, I can appreciate that he connects so many different things and creates a worldview that is interesting at the very least. I don't think anything he says really holds any water. Mm-hmm. Or if it does, then he's still not a reliable source on those things. But in any of those cases, I think he's also worth giving a listen to, at least to see what he believes and not just to dismiss him out of hand. Listen to what he says, judge it. Same with Wes Huff. Listen to what he says and judge it. And like Joel said, truth will show itself. It doesn't hide from the light.
Yeah.
And we believe that Billy Carson has tried to hide as much of this as he can. He tries to hide during the debate itself. And just what he says, he can't qualify. So we believe that what he says isn't true, but go look at it yourself, figure it out. Christianity is greater than whatever he believes.
This podcast is that podcast, not ours, maybe ours, but that podcast is the perfect example and proof of why 1 Peter 3:15 is the conduct that Christians must have to be effective in the defense of the gospel.
Yep. Especially apologetically, like Huff. Yeah.
Also, Christ is king.
Christ is absolutely king. And not an alien.
Alien. Okay, this has been the Second Rate Saints podcast. If you'd like to see all of our past and future episodes, check us out at secondratesaints.com. If you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email us at secondratesaints@gmail.com or use the chat feature on our website. If you'd like to support the Second Rate Saint podcast and this next year, then you can donate to us at buymeacoffee.com/secondratesaints or use the link on our website. Thank you for another excellent episode. Message us with questions, comments, and concerns for our next TERT episode once you watch this debate.
Yes.
Because we would love to get some interaction on this. Okay. Love you all.
Have a great day.
Bye. Even Caleb likes you.
Even Caleb likes you.
And that's your new sign statement.
Up. Anyway. Stuart loves you.
Caleb likes you. Stuart loves you.